goes, whichever leaves.
Welcome to Bending the Arc. Bending the Arc is a show of the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition offered here on KKRN Community Supported Radio. On this show, we speak to people concerned about the criminal justice system, seeking reform, and acting in personal and collective ways for positive change. We're glad you're here. On today's show, I have the honor and privilege of speaking with Jennifer Katsky, and I'm going to let her introduce herself however she sees fit, but she has been in the news recently, so you might have heard from her, and I thought it's a beautiful opportunity to have a more in-depth conversation. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me here. So as you said, my name is Jennifer, and I'm a critical care nurse, been a critical care nurse for about 15 years. I am a proud military mom. My son's currently deployed, and I have lived in Shasta County for about 6 years. I moved here from the Bay Area to work for the community as a flight nurse. I worked for PHI, and that's what brought me to Shasta County. I really do enjoy living here. It's a great community.
And who's PHI?
PHI is one of our flight crews that will respond to 911 calls or transport critically ill patients to higher level of care by helicopter or airplane with outlying hospitals that are very small, can't handle very critically ill patients. I would be the one to go pick them up and bring them into Mercy or maybe even UC Davis. And so that was my job.
More recently, you've become known or gotten some attention for your work on Measure B, bringing to the public's attention some of the provisions of that, some of your concerns. What kinds of advocacy efforts or work have you been involved in your life, if any?
Well, this is the first time I've actually done anything politically. I've always, as a nurse, advocated for the best interest of my patient and my patient's family.
Yes.
That's something that is just necessary as a nurse. We are the last line of defense to keep patients safe and keep their families informed and make sure that they're getting the best care possible. I'm also a survivor of domestic violence, and so I did spend some time advocating for women and women's programs, getting out of abusive relationships or advocating for programs that help women and their children get out of these bad relationships. But what I found was that the election of 2024 was something that I was very passionate about for multiple reasons. I think that we all had that. But for me personally, it was personally very near and dear to me because my son is enlisted military. I just felt like that was the biggest threat for me personally, that something would happen as it did, and that he would end up thousands of miles away. And I felt that advocating for people to not vote the way they apparently did in order to protect my son. I did a lot of debating. I had a friend that we were on debate panels, and we would tell the truth. And then after the election, and I'm sure you're aware of this, that the tactic was flood the zone. Just throw everything. It's overwhelming. And I just said, you know, hey, this is insane. We have to really spread this information, and we have to say, like, hey, you take that, you take this, you take this. I had a group of people I worked with around the country. We met once a week, and they would tell us the news about what they were working on, like education and maybe LGBT rights. And mine was clearly healthcare. And so we all had the information so that when we were advocating or we were talking to people, we had those topics at hand. We didn't come in blindly. So I just continued to speak up and speak out. And then I found that, you know, my biggest impact is not going to be national, because, you know, I don't live in DC. I don't work for a large organization. So I started focusing on local. And that's when I created my organization called Shasta Exposed. It's a citizen journalist, independent kind of, hey, here are the facts. You make the decision on your own, depending on what you believe and how you feel about it. But, and I say this to my patients too, you can choose whatever you want. I just want you to have the correct information to make that decision. And so that's what I started. I feel like that's advocating for my community. You know, my father was an absolutely amazing heart and lung surgeon, and he grew up during the civil rights era. And I remember as a very small child, my father said to me, you know, Jennifer, if you see something that's just wrong, something that's inherently unjust, it's your responsibility to step up and say something. You just need to do that. And I was like, what, 9, 10? And it's really carried with me my entire life. You know, I'm about to be 49. So I felt like this is my responsibility. I do have that privilege to do that. And a lot of people don't, or they have the fear. And I just really don't have the fear. And so I'm really honored to kind of advocate for the many things that I've advocated for.
Mm-hmm. We often think about activism or advocacy in little boxes, but there are so many people who have those skills that are transferable. Educators standing up for their students, or, you know, people who lead faith communities standing up for their parishioners, or the ways that we reach out to each other. That another word for advocacy is really what you're saying, standing up mm-hmm. for people.
Yeah, absolutely. Advocacy can be making a sandwich for a homeless person. You know, here in Redding and the Shasta County, I mean, yesterday it was 109 degrees. Insane. But we have 1,000 homeless people that are living on the streets right now that don't have the privilege of living in an air-conditioned area. You can advocate for one person by saying, hey, I bought you this Gatorade. This is going to help you stay out of the hospital, keep you hydrated. That's advocacy. It doesn't have to be something that's in the news. It can mm-hmm. it can just be little things. That's advocacy.
Yeah, and we can all find our niche, like where we want to work. We know that we do need to work on these systems as well, and that awareness that yes, elections have consequences for the military, for our safety, for healthcare, for all of those things.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the things that gets lost is that people think, well, that's, you know, the federal election. That's really not going to affect me here. And that's just such misinformation. It absolutely will affect you here. There are people that I've treated in the hospital that have come in and ended up in the intensive care unit because their insurance premiums went up so significantly that they could no longer afford it, couldn't afford their medications, and now here they are. That's because of a decision that was made or a vote that was made in Congress, and now affecting you in California.
I also appreciate what you were saying about, well, I don't live in DC, I do work locally, and we do know that there are more extreme groups who have focused specifically on the local because it's more accessible. It's less expensive to run for those offices. Maybe people aren't paying as much attention to school board or water board or planning commission or things that do have an impact and launch people to other offices.
Yeah, there's a statistic, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. It's somewhere in the 50s to 60%, I believe, maybe a little bit higher, of local office positions that go unchallenged. Yeah. And so, you know, I never want to advocate for somebody to do something that they're uncomfortable doing. You should do your advocacy, do something on your, what you feel is comfortable in your zone. But if you're somebody that has a child in school and you want to make that change, run for school board. Find those positions that are, they're running unopposed, and you know, run, because that's how change is made in your local community.
Mm-hmm. You share different ways that you advocate, and I've heard you speak about the importance of education, and you were saying earlier, bringing facts to light. You were a nurse during COVID, and I've spoken to some health professionals who shared how difficult that experience was for them. That I had a doctor that left, and she said half of my patients yelled at me because I wanted them to be vaccinated, and the other half yelled at me because I wasn't requiring people to get vaccinated. I'm wondering what navigating that experience taught you about approaches or even education, which, you know, expertise has kind of become a fraught word.
Yeah, right. One of the things that I think that the COVID pandemic here in Shasta County taught me is that fear is a very powerful tool, and it's used to convince and control people. I'm one of the people that, like I said, believes that you need to make your own decisions, and patients absolutely have the right to bodily autonomy. If the doctor says you need to have this surgery and, you know, they say no, that's their choice, and that needs to be respected. The problem when we had COVID here in Shasta County was that there was so much misinformation being spread, and the government was using fear as a tactic to push their political ideology, that people suffered the consequences. And the consequences were severe, if not the ultimate. That was really unfortunate. But, you know, in the moment when you're in the intensive care unit and you see this happening, all of that just kind of goes away. I don't care if you are red, blue, green, whatever, documented, not documented, what, it doesn't matter. You're a human, and humans deserve care. Mm-hmm. And so there were many nurses that held the hands of patients until they passed away, so they wouldn't pass away alone, because families weren't allowed into the hospital at the time.
Right.
So there were good things that I learned about people and the community during COVID, compassion. Mm-hmm. And then there were obviously bad things that we need to continue to work on.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN. I'm your host, Sharon Brzezelera, and I'm speaking with Jennifer Katsky. To get back to Measure B, do you remember when you first learned about Measure B and kind of what struck you about what you were reading?
So as I progressed and grew Shasta Exposed, I did a lot of research. There was a lot of research. I'm a paid subscriber to every local newspaper, you know, plus up and down California. I think that's really important to read multiple outlets to get multiple perspectives from all the different sides. And I kept hearing this talk about the group of citizens that are doing a signature petition for this measure, and it was really focused on voter ID. I started seeing it all over social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram and so forth. And I'm like, wow, this is really big up here. I need to look more into this. And I also looked at the people who were behind it. Who were these five Shasta County residents that were pushing it? I pulled the language from it, the actual documents that were submitted to the county and approved by the county council. And I went one by one and looked at the law, the actual California law, and compared what they are wanting to do with Measure B and what is allowed by California law. And I also looked at the fact that Shasta is a charter county and what that allows them to do and not allow them to do. And what I found was that most, if not all, of the provisions within Measure B are preempted, is the word, or illegal under California or federal law. And charter counties do have autonomy in certain aspects municipally, but elections are an animal of the state. They are state concerns. And charter counties, city charters, and then San Francisco is a city-county charter, they have no right or ability to overrule California law when it comes to something that is governed by the state only. Mm-hmm. And so that prompted me to, take action. I waited a while, and that's because Huntington Beach is a charter city who did kind of the same thing. The lower courts had shot it down and they took it to the Supreme Court of California. And I needed to wait and see what they did, because if they said, oh no, it's fine, then I had no case. But when Huntington Beach decision came down and the appellate court said, no, you can't do this. And it really wasn't about the provisions. What the appellate court of California said, the Supreme Court of California said, was that charter counties don't have the right to overrule California law about elections. It's not about if voter ID or anything like that is legal or not, constitutional or not. It's about, does a charter county have the right to overrule California law? And their decision was no, they do not. Mm-hmm. And that just prompted me to figure out what should I do. What I did was I reached out to everyone's greatest source of support is our friends and our family and all of the different expertise that they have. And I said, what can I do? This is the situation. What do I do? What can I do? And they said, to stop it, you need to file what's called a writ of mandate. And it's basically asking the judge to look it over, or call judicial review. And if they find that this is something that is wrong, then it would force the government to follow the law. And that's what I petitioned with this writ of mandate, was to say, hey, this is blatantly illegal. The Supreme Court of California just shot it down in Huntington Beach. You can't put something on the ballot to the electorate that is illegal.
I think sometimes people feel like, well, I don't know people with that level of expertise. But when I hear you, I think many of us who want that involvement know people who know people, or can point us in the right direction. If you ask enough people, you can educate yourself on those, navigating those systems.
Oh, absolutely. Everything that I was able to find was either, it's public record. Everything was public record. You have a supercomputer in your hand every day. You can get all of that information right there if you take the time to research it. What's even more helpful is when you have the people that will point you in the right direction and say, for example, an attorney friend of mine that lives on the East Coast said, go to this site and search this term. And then that really led me down kind of the way to get the law or what the case law was that would prove my case. And so that really helped me significantly. People forget that you have the right to see documents, the Public Records Act, FOIA, which is the Freedom of Information Act. You have the right to request those, and they can't deny it unless there's like ongoing litigation or something like that. They can redact a few things, but you have the right to do that. And don't be afraid to use that and see, because that's how we hold people accountable.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of awareness of the voter ID. There may not be a full awareness of the implications of that for everyone. And there are other implications that were illegal by state law. So I'm wondering if you can share some of the things that were most concerning to you that you might have found other people weren't aware of.
Yeah, well, first of all, what I found distressing when, you know, driving around the community was the vote yes on Measure B signs that were put up only said voter ID. That for me is extraordinarily disingenuous and misleading, because if it was only about voter ID, it probably wouldn't have been such a big deal. And that's also because California is going to have a voter ID on the November election if California wants to require voter ID. So I probably wouldn't have even done anything if it was only voter ID, because I would have needed to wait until November to see how the election turned out. It contains multiple provisions, which I'm happy to go into, that disenfranchise a huge portion of this community. And that was very much overlooked in the advertising of Measure B in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people tend to vote in a way that they see things over and over and over again. And so when they went to vote on their ballot, they just go, oh, Measure B, that's that one with voter ID. That's what I want.
Right.
But they don't know that your wife might not be able to vote because she doesn't have ID that doesn't match her maiden name and her birth name. And, you know, it's just like a big deal. The other thing is that I feel that's been overlooked at is the Measure B is really part of a broader movement that has gained momentum after the 2020 election, the federal election. It's just been fueled by Trump's repeated claims of the election was stolen and that American elections are fundamentally rigged. He's continuing that, what I call the big lie. You know, there's been 60 court cases and audits and recounts and investigation, and there's absolutely no evidence of widespread fraud sufficient to change any outcome of the 2020 election. And Measure B really reflects that same mindset. It's really less about solving actual problems and more about perpetuating the false narrative that our elections are inherently corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than increasing confidence through evidence, it just reinforces distrust, because it asks the electorate to believe that our system is broken, even though they can't prove the evidence. You know, let's talk about Shasta County for just one second. There's been plenty of accusations and conspiracy claims, lawsuits, but you know, accusations aren't proof.
Mm-hmm.
And to my knowledge, from all of the research that I did, there's not been any court findings over the last 20 years that Shasta County elections were decided by fraud. Thieves claims were actually recently in the last few years tested in court. You know, Laura Hobbs in 24
Who's one of the authors of the...
Correct. She brought case saying that it was fraudulent, that it was, you know, rigged. And the judge told her that there was a profound lack of evidence, and that was dismissed. And then she took it to the appeals court, and they also dismissed it. And then last year, Dan Ladd sued the Shasta County Elections Administration, and that case was also dismissed. And despite all of this, there still remains individuals in the community who promote this narrative that Shasta County elections are compromised without any proof. It goes back to that fear tactic. Mm-hmm. If I say it enough and you're afraid, you're going to side with me and do, you know, do what I say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't provide evidence, but it certainly creates a culture of fear, and one that at a political level, there's been this undermining of trust in all kinds of public institutions for 20, 30 something years that was waiting for powder kegs of social media, COVID, all of those things to really catch.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, what has not been reported much was the fact that I actually filed a second lawsuit against the county for conflict of interest, because the proponents of Measure B were working in the election office, or are working in the election office, with discretionary election tasks and jobs, and to have somebody who has a financial, political, personal interest in the outcome of the election poses a real conflict of interest. And it makes people question, you know, what is really happening? I had multiple people come to me and say, I don't trust that my ballot is going to count the way that I voted. And that's really a tragedy. And what strikes me is just so overwhelming is that for the last, gosh, how many years, we've been listening to the same group of people who created this conflict of interest recently talk about election integrity and election transparency and election honesty. And, you know, I wrote a letter to the Shasta County Board of Supervisors, County Council, and Clint Curtis, and saying, look, this is the law. This is the conflict of interest. These are the people we're concerned about. I'm giving you voluntarily a chance to remove them in the name of election integrity and transparency, which you claim to champion. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you don't, I have no choice but to file suit. And they didn't. And so I did. And unfortunately, because of time constraints and the fact that, there were so many people to legally serve, and a few of those were able to abscond very easily, I had to voluntarily dismiss it, but I made a plea to the community to call, make complaints. That's your advocacy. Hey, Kevin Cry, you are on the ballot. This is wrong. Do you want my vote? Do something. I felt that by bringing it out into the public and not behind court doors was better in that moment with the short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. And my recollection, but correct me if I'm wrong, is it's not that you said you have to fire them all, but you could certainly reassign people to positions within the county clerk that are not directly involved with elections. Is that the...
That's correct. The request that I made to the court was a very narrowly tailored request, was that no one was to be fired. No, never. I would never do that. What we asked was that they were put into positions where they had no access to ballots and they had no access to the people voting, because electioneering is is illegal, right? It's federal crime. And nobody can listen in the whole time that they're talking to the voter. And who knows what they were saying. The other thing that's important is that in conflict of interest cases prior to an election, there only has to be a perception of conflict of interest, right? Like, you have the right to an unbiased election. And if there's even a perception that something could happen, that's enough for intervention. Whereas after the election, if you think that this outcome was fraudulent, you have to have actual evidence. And so it made more sense to do it before than after. And even though I voluntarily dismissed the case, it's still on record. It doesn't change the fact that that court case is in there, that evidence is in there. It was 400 pages, by the way, that all that evidence was in there. And very interestingly enough, I went down to the election office on election day and the Department of Justice was there. And I pulled them aside and I said, you know, hey, I'm concerned. And I went through this whole thing with who I am, what I've done, and la-da-dee-da. And he goes, Ms. Katsky, do you think we don't know who you are? We've read everything that you've done. We really appreciate it. And you're one of the reasons that we're here. And I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I like broke down in tears. I felt so vindicated that something I had done had made a difference, you know? And I said to him, I said, God, cause it really felt like my house was on fire and I'm outside yelling, I need the fire department. And the fire department was like, you know, we're just really busy. I just, cause you take care of it, get your hose out, you know? And for them to be there and tell me, like, I brought him a copy and I said, here are all my cases. I know it's really long, but like, maybe you have a few minutes to read it. And he goes, you really think that I didn't read it? I've read every page. We know you. Wow. We know who you know. Wow. Who, or what you've done. So.
And that says so much both about people who are still continuing to work for the rule of law and the power of individuals. It's part of this onslaught of undermining is about us losing hope in being able to affect any change, right? That anyone's going to listen, that it can have any impact. And so the work that you do and people who say, no, this is worth saving, this is worth fighting for, can give courage to other people.
Yes,
to do that.
Absolutely. Exactly what you said. You know, people think I'm just one person. No one's going to listen to me. Well, you know what? I was just one person. What I did made a difference. It took a long time to prove it, right? It took me going down to the election office on June 2nd and having these two attorneys from the Department of Justice telling me to my face that they've been reading everything I've submitted. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I would never want to face those two in court. They looked pretty intense, but that proved that every single thing that I had been through, every dollar I had spent of my own money doing this was absolutely worth it, because it's not just about me. It's about everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not about Democrat votes either. It's about everybody's vote. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about Democrat taxpayer dollars. It's about all of our taxpayer dollars, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green, unaffiliated, whatever, it doesn't matter. You have the right to know that your taxpayer dollars are being spent wisely. You have the right to know that your election is free, fair, and unbiased. The whole political thing doesn't matter to me. And the other thing that I want to say that it gets me a little emotional, I'm going to try not to do it on here, but if we're sending our children thousands of miles away to protect the way we live in the United States for democracy, for the Constitution, for the rule of law, and they may face the ultimate sacrifice, I'm willing to take a risk that the risk that I would take is nowhere near what they're taking. I can do that. And if we had more people that are willing to do that, I think that, you know, our country would be in a different position right now. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Bending the Arc. I'm in conversation with Jennifer Katsky. You know what you just said earlier? You said, I don't have fear. And you're certainly extremely courageous. You have paid a price. It does cost us to have courage. And one of my favorite definitions of courage is along the lines of, it's not having fear, but it's experiencing the emotions that you do and acting anyway. I wanted to ask you what it has been like for you to screw up that courage to act anyway. And what have you faced as the result?
The consequences were very serious, but I knew that that was going to happen in this community because, I mean, realistically, this is a 70-30 Republican county. I was, you know, harassed. I had people tried to intimidate me to stay silent, drop the case. I was threatened
physically,
but also in my work. Mm. Somebody threatened to call my place of employment and tell them that I was purposefully killing my MAGA patients. And you know, anybody who knows me know that that's ridiculous. But what I did was I thought about all these things beforehand. I was very proactive. And before I filed the case, I went to my boss and I said, this is what I'm going to do. And I know this is going to happen. And I want to alert you of that because you might get phone calls. And
smart.
What I can say is that, the organization that I work for has their issues. Every organization does. But I can very proudly say that they were 100% behind me to exercise my First Amendment rights. And a lot of the HR and security people say, I don't agree with you politically, but I am so proud of you for exercising those rights. And we'll make sure that you are safe and protected here in this hospital. And that made me feel so proud to work for Dignity and Common Spirit. That was mm-hmm. an incredible move. And I felt very supported by that.
Mm-hmm. And truly, I think that's something that we, as a public, seem to have forgotten, that the freedom of speech and expressing it, that's across the board, not just yours, not just what you want to say, but that if you want your freedom to protected, you need to use it and allow other people to use it,
right?
As well,
and also not to have the consequences for it. You know, they could have easily taken a phone call that says, "Oh, you know, Jennifer's the worst nurse, and she said this, and she did that, and she did this," and absolutely investigated and done all this. And but you know, they obviously listened to whatever it was, but nothing ever comes of it because they know that it's not reality, and that this is kind of a tactic to try and ruin me or punish me for what I was doing. And they were just not going to stand for that. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that's something that we can learn in this community, that I don't care if you agree with me or not, but I'm not going to step on your rights. And I'm going to allow you to exercise those rights because I don't want those rights trampled on. So mm-hmm. why should I trample on yours?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of consequences, by the time we're having this interview, the Secretary of State is suing and has made it clear in the press that everyone can access that they alerted the proponents of or the authors of Measure B that there are illegal provisions here. We will sue to overturn if it passes. So I'm wondering what are some of the implications that you see of that, and what do you make of those who crafted the measure saying, oh, we knew that was going to happen. That's fine. That's like, it's part of the grand plan.
I think it's very selfish. I think going back to what I said about this political ideology and continuing on this facade that elections are fraudulent and rigged, that's kind of what they're doing. And they're doing it at the cost of the community.
Yeah. And what are some of those costs that people tend not to think about?
So let's just put it like this. The small kind of, case that I, went through, and Hobbs and Gallardo and all of those people that were interveners, they are suing me for $124,000 in attorney fees. Okay. That little tiny pea of a case that was like nothing, just against me, somebody self-represented, not against a big fancy lawyer, right? So now imagine the cost with big time attorneys against the Attorney General and the Department of Justice and what that's going to cost. I have tried over and over and over again to pull the cost from Huntington Beach. They have not released that. Mm. It's not been released to the public. I can only imagine, considering what the breakdown of the cost were that were submitted to the court from the opposing side's bill at $700 an hour, what that's going to cost if the county decides to defend it. Because they do have a choice to say, no, we're not going to defend this. And I hope they do that, because the fact of the matter is that we have serious needs in Shasta County. Serious needs. Shasta County has double the rate of suicide than any other, like our suicide rate is higher than any other county in California. And we lack the mental health and addiction treatment here in the county. And that's not underfunded. They are talking, they're laying off people, hiring freezes. They're talking about furloughing people to save on the budget. We don't have enough prosecutors to prosecute criminals that have seriously hurt and injured or destroyed the lives of people here in our county. And one of them that I'm super passionate about is our IHSS workers. Mm. They have been begging for a raise to bring them up to a livable wage, just a livable wage, not an exorbitant wage, a livable wage. And that's been denied because of quote unquote budget constraints. And they care for our most fragile community members who should take the priority. And it just is very sad. And I said this the other day that, are you going to say I told you so? No, I'm not. I'm going to say I'm really sad for my community, because this could have been prevented. Mm-hmm. And we should be holding our elected officials accountable for the way that they spend our money. This is our money. They work for us, not the other way around. While they're giving themselves raises, there are people that can't access the mental health care they need. You know, I read a statistic the other day that Shasta County primary care, real problem here, real problem. There's one physician for every 1,300 residents in Shasta County. Why? That's silly and dangerous. And it causes serious issues within the hospital system because people aren't getting primary care, they're getting sick, and then they're coming to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And that's not how it's supposed to work. And so it's very unfortunate that, and this is what I tried to prevent, using those valuable taxpayer dollars to fight something that we knew from the very, very beginning, because of the precedent set in Huntington Beach, is bound to lose. Mm-hmm. It's just going to lose. And I really hope and pray that the Board of Supervisors makes the right decision and prioritizes the community over political ideology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's people's confidence in the system. It's the time and energy and staff time that is needed elsewhere. It's all of the multiple costs to individuals who, as well as taxpayers. It's interesting and not surprising that those numbers aren't coming from Huntington Beach. I'm wondering what the public reaction would be to have a good look at all of the cases that have been brought against the county and why and how much we're paying for that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not somebody to speak poorly of other people, sure, especially on a radio show. I really have nothing negative to say about Mr. Larmer. He's been very pleasant and cordial to me. And I would just say that a case of this magnitude against the Attorney General, he can't do it alone. There's just no way he can do it alone. Even if he was the best attorney in the entire state of California, he could not do it alone. Mm-hmm. And that's going to require hiring additional people, retaining additional counsel. Those people don't work for free.
They do not.
It'd be nice, but they do not. And they need to be paid by taxpayer dollars. It just makes me very sad that the community is in need of so many things, and I hope that they choose to not spend the money that way.
The other underlying issue in all of this, and I've heard you speak on this too, is the rule of law, right? How we're undermining the rule of law. And it's really struck me in the past several years that this question of whether or not we should support the rule of law comes into conversations where we considered it a given, right? In the past, like, well, we have laws, we're following them. And so I'm wondering what you have noticed about having these conversations about, hey, we're a nation of laws. We may disagree with some laws. They may need to be amended, enforced, overturned. Yeah, there are lots of things. They're not infallible, but we are in danger if we do not follow what exists, or people selectively don't follow it. So I'm wondering how you are thinking about and talking to people about what it means to follow, believe in,
yeah,
the rule of law.
So I hate to make it a red blue thing, but unfortunately in this area that we're talking about right now, this question, it has to, because the Republicans have always said that they are the party of law and order. That is their lingo, not mine, not Democrats, their thing. And when I have spoken to people about Measure B, it goes back to the same kind of conspiracy theory that Democrats are stealing the elections, and the conspiracy theory about Sacramento and so forth. But coming back to Measure B, I think that it's a null and void topic if you love it or hate it, because the law is the law and the law must be followed, because if it's not, it's going to be the Wild West here. We just do whatever you want and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And that's just not how we work. And if we allow it to continue like that, it becomes a very dangerous and slippery slope. And And that's not what we want for our community. We don't want that for the United States, like just in general. Mm-hmm. So just because something is popular doesn't change the fact that it's illegal. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, like every single voter in Shasta County could have voted yes on Measure B. That doesn't change the law. Right. Right? You know what I mean? Like it just doesn't change the legality of it. You don't change laws by trying to pass a local initiative. You change laws by going down and speaking with legislatures, because that's where laws happen, right? And I don't know if it's just lack of desire to do that or lack of fundamental understanding of how these things work. I'm not shaming anybody on that, but it must start in Sacramento. You absolutely can call your local representative who is in Sacramento and say, look, I'm not happy about this. And they propose a bill to the California legislature, which would change the law. You can't start from the bottom and work your way up. It has to come from the top and work its way down to the state. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's really been the problem of trying to get people to understand that. They just think that, oh, everybody wants it, so we should be able to do it. Well, no. I mean, I can think of 100 things that everybody wants, but, you know, it's illegal, right?
Yeah, and also that thing I've heard you speak about, we're all connected. So I might have very strong opinions about a law that's not working in my behalf, but I don't get to control all laws. And if you don't have the right to speak, that's going to come back and affect my right to speak, for right. example.
Right. You know, I could write an initiative that says that, you know, parking and handicap shouldn't be mandatory. Like anybody can park there. I mean, it should be handicapped people, but if it's the only one available, that's okay. You know, just because everybody voted yes for that doesn't mean that it's going to be a law. You know what yeah. I mean? It has to follow the rules. It has mm-hmm. to follow the law. Mm-hmm. And the way that you do these things is by going like, hey, this is what we proposed in Shasta County. How can we get this through the legislature? Mm-hmm. And so that we can mm-hmm. implement this in Shasta County, because this is a concern. It doesn't happen by spreading lies and conspiracy theories and passing initiatives that are going to be dead on arrival.
You know, you talked about education and reading from different sources and different perspectives, and providing some of that on your website and when you teach. And you teach to people. So it's ShastaExposed.org?
.com.
.com. Mm-hmm. What do you do in preparing to put things out on Shasta Exposed that give you confidence in the evidence or the facts? That's something that's also of contention currently.
Sure. Well, I make it very clear that you should not trust me. You can read this, and I provide the links where the information was received and put into a story. I quote or cite the original author, and then you can use the that site to go down underneath it to read it for yourself, and then you can see that, you know, well, this article really did say that. And then if you don't trust that article, look up that topic somewhere else where you feel mm-hmm. that will help you kind of go down like a rabbit hole, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Keep searching.
Yeah. Just keep looking and seeing, and you'll find the truth on your own. I never want to try to convince somebody to vote the way I want you to vote. Mm-hmm. But I want you to be able to vote knowing you have the correct information, not something based in fear yeah. or conspiracy theories or lies, mm-hmm. because that's just wrong. Because when the consequences hit, you feel like, wait, that's not what you said was going to happen. I was lied to. Mm-hmm. And that I just feel like that's just should never happen.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, is there anything else we didn't talk about that you feel is important to bring into our conversation before we end?
I want to remind people that, you know, history teaches us a lot. And one of the things that's so important is that standing up for what you believe is right is not easy, especially when that position is unpopular or it challenges those that are in power. But when you refuse to stay silent, you may face criticism like intimidation, harassment, because I sure did. It's their attempt to discourage you from speaking out. And that's their point. That's what they want. The goal is not to win the argument on facts. The goal is to make the cost of speaking so high that you decide it's easier just to back off. But I want to remind people, especially here in Shasta County, don't give in. You have the right to speak. You have the right to petition the government, to attend public meetings, file complaints, request public records. They are rights protected by the United States Constitution. No individual, organization, or government official gets to decide whether you are allowed to exercise them. If others choose intimidation over debate or harassment over evidence, that says far more about the strength of their position, about your position, than it does about them because they're afraid of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So stay firm, keep speaking, keep asking questions, demand accountability from our elected officials, because democracy depends on us. Okay. We the people, on citizens who are willing to participate, even when doing so is extraordinarily difficult and scary. The Constitution is on your side, and never allow anyone to convince you that silence is the price of citizenship, because your vote, your voice is your power, and never forget that elected officials work for you, not the other way around.
Thank you so much for that and for coming and for all of your work.
It's my pleasure and honor.
You've been listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN, supported by volunteers who bring progressive radio to you. Our theme music is offered by Jacob Akana. Thank you for listening.
Who am I though? I don't believe I can let. No, I can't let go. No, I can't let go. I can't get high.